CHUM AM Toronto is TSN 1050, an iHeartRadio station and the voice of Toronto sports.
I'm Tim Hathaway with a TSN 1050 Sports Center update for Fat Bastard Burrito, home of the life-changing roasted steak burrito. Follow them on Instagram at Bastard Burrito. A sea of blue expected to be on display at Safeco Field this weekend. Jays fans from Western Canada descending on Seattle. Jays first of three with the Mariners tonight, and Joe Biagini coming off a strong seven against the Yankees. Starts for the Jays. Rookie right-hander Sam Gaviglio goes for the Mariners. Warriors looking to put away the Cavs tonight in Cleveland. Chance to go 16-0. A game at 8 o'clock on TSN 1050. French Open men's semis now on TSN. Andy Murray and Stan Wawrinka waging a titanic battle on Philippe Chatrier. Murray up 2 sets to 1, and they're into a 4-set tiebreak. Now it's Leafs Lunch, TSN 1050, voice of Leafs Nation.
This is Leafs Lunch, playoff edition, with Andy Petrillo on TSN 1050, the voice of Leafs Nation.
Look at that. I've trained you on Fridays to expect Debbie Deb, but she comes on in the noon hour,
only the
my
noon
friend.
Hour. I keep forgetting it's only the noon hour.
It's crazy. These people, they don't know yet. See, first they mock, then they can't wait for the song because it gets their weekend set. Prepares you for the weekend. I can't get a show going with you unless I see you eating a muffin or banana bread. That's how it is. You suddenly just
This banana
create.
Bread is to die for.
Yeah, you are eating, like, and you it's are not even really offering me a piece, by the way.
One piece of banana bread?
Oh, now you want to offer me a piece?
One piece of banana? It's really homemade, really good.
Well, that's why. I see that it's homemade.
And not by me.
No kidding.
Even better, not by me.
Then I want it even more. Welcome
on
into Leafs Lunch. We'll see if I get a piece of banana bread here at TSN 1050.
There's actually food on Leafs Lunch today, ladies and gentlemen. There's actually food on Leafs Lunch.
First of all, can I just say that I always have food. Because I pack my food. I bring my food.
No,
I have some mango and papaya waiting for me.
At least lunch. There should be a buffet.
Okay, well, let's get on that. I don't know. Who wants to provide the buffet here at Leafs Lunch? I will be more than happy
to eat their food.
Let's get our sponsors
working on this. Send us something.
Yeah.
I'm dying here.
I know. Gord, my goodness. All he does is complain. He's hangry. I brought some of my food.
I am hangry.
I have some of my hummus dip and my fruit and vegetables.
Good for you.
And then my weekend starts.
When are you going to eat?
Well, I'll eat when we...
That's not food.
No, that's food. It's great food. So good.
Okay, whatever you say.
Okay, but the sugar you're eating, that's good.
Not sugar, it's banana bread.
Okay. All right, we have a lot of topics to discuss.
Yeah.
Do we go right out of the gate?
Yeah.
And talk Sidney Crosby?
Oh my. Okay. So.
Okay, wait a second. Okay. Intentional, unintentional.
Or not. It's a penalty.
Should have been a penalty either way.
Should have been a penalty.
Yeah.
For sure it should have been.
But, no doubt.
But do you... Do you buy into this whole narrative that Sidney Crosby gets a free pass from the officials?
Okay, this is where we were debating this all morning, and everyone I talked to, because when the whole incident happened where, you know, he went crashing into the boards, we all know, oh, geez, why am I blanking now on what round that was? When he took the hit, concussion, missed the game.
Against Washington, round 2?
Yes. I'm blanking on who that was now.
Ovi slew-footed him. And then Niskanen cross-checked.
That's right. Thank you. That whole crazy play, which that in itself people thought was planned. Oh, yeah. Really? Ovi planned to do that. Niskanen. Yeah. They all thought he was going to fall. But, you know, he ends up getting hit. And a lot of people, the conversation around that whole hit was, you have to protect your stars. You know, it was a elbow to the head. That's what we were all debating. But what came out of that was protecting your stars.
Right.
And do stars deserve to be protected a little bit more? And do guys, like the whole slashing thing, like stop the slashing. So guys like Crosby, McDavid, and, you know, we brought up Johnny Gaudreau because he was the one that actually broke his wrist in the regular season. Let guys like that shine. So you need to make those kinds of calls so you don't hamper their skill set and what they can provide to the game. But here's the thing, you have to be careful, because then does that mean you give them the benefit of the doubt when it's the flip, when they're the ones that are creating the crime?
So here's the thing I thought about last night. When Crosby and Subban were tied up behind the net, if in 1985 a Chicago Blackhawk put Wayne Gretzky in a leg lock behind the net, there'd be 12 Oilers on the ice in a nanosecond.
There's another good point made by you. Like, are
I'm not advocating a return to the vigilante justice days and the enforcers and all that. I'm just saying that it would have been inconceivable then to have a player leg locking the best player in the game and holding him down behind the net. You would have to answer for that.
So you're wondering where were the other Penguins?
No, I'm not. Because that's not the game now.
Okay.
That's not the game now. It's just changed a lot. For a lot of reasons. When Dave Semenko was the heavyweight champion of the NHL, he weighed 215 pounds. He had a 20-goal year 1 year. He could legitimately play a regular shift. Fighters eventually evolved into 250, 260-pound players who only played 5 or 6 minutes, got fewer than 10 points in a year. They became almost a sidecar to the game. So you would the only person that would fight one of those guys was another one of those guys. Whereas back in the 80s and before, almost every player would have a fight over the course of the year. Now, most players don't have a fight all year. So that deterrent became nuclear almost. And so if Pittsburgh had an enforcer and he came out to fight Subban after that, Subban would not fight him and no one would blame him. I'm not fighting a 265-pound guy who doesn't play. Why would I do that? I'm just saying that. Did Crosby deserve an extra penalty for...
I think so.
Yeah, on the stuff on Subban?
Yes.
Yes, he probably did.
Yes.
He probably did. So in those two cases, but what I'm saying is, at the same time, I don't see him getting a free pass from the officials. I don't see the evidence of where he's getting all these free passes, and he's getting away with... Now, I guess people would say he broke Mark Mathot's finger with a slash. Shattered it.
He lopped it off.
He blew it up. He threw a water ball on the ice last night, and he gave PK Subban the noogie repeatedly.
Yeah, lost count.
It was noogie time. So I can see where people would get that, but at the same time, I think you have to look at all the times when Brandon Dubinsky cross checks him in the head, and he gets slew footed and slammed from behind. I don't see him getting this free pass from the officials. I don't see it. I can see why if you pick out specific events and say, oh, look at Crosby. He's getting, if you breathed on Michael Jordan, it was a foul. LeBron James takes 4 to 5 steps without dribbling the basketball. So he does. I mean, LeBron James travels more than I do.
And you're a frequent flyer.
Yeah. I do get that. I just don't know that you can make the case convincingly for Crosby that he is a protected player or that he is somehow not subject to the same rules as everyone else.
Well, and this is the question then, you have to ask yourself when we're talking about officiating. Do you want it to then be, is it consistent? Because this is the argument we're having. If it's consistent, then that means the call that goes against, a fourth liner goes against Crosby. Or are you of the mind where I'm okay if they let it slip for the Stars because the Stars are incredible and they sell the game and they're fun to watch. And, some people may argue, is it good for the game to have Crosby sit in the box for 4 minutes, if you get the extra? But there's people making those arguments. But you have to ask yourself, so what do you want? Do you want the officiating to be a little skewed? Because let's face it, it can be.
I don't.
Or do you want it to be consistent? And if that's the case, then Crosby gets the extra against PK, and Crosby still gets the penalty for throwing the bottle.
Now, do you think that an official saw Crosby throw the bottle and didn't call it? Because, it was behind the play. It's entirely conceivable to me that the officials didn't see the water bottle come flying off the bench.
Well, so what can an official do? I mean, you don't miss the bottle on the ice. Can they go back and be like,
no.
Can they just give a bench minor, though, and be like, fine, if nobody wants to fess up,
because
you don't
know how it got there.
Okay.
Did someone actually drop it on the ice and someone, unless you actually saw it happen, you can't call it. But I haven't heard someone say or show that an official looked at it and declined to call it.
But the fact that Crosby went up to the official and looked like he was apologizing.
Well, he did, because he said, I'm sure they said, how'd that water bottle get on the ice? And Crosby probably said,
I chucked it at you.
It slipped out of my hand. I'm not sure I buy that explanation. I'm not sure I'm buying that explanation. Because he's got the greatest hands maybe in the history of hockey. But
yeah.
But that said, water bottles get slippery, I guess. But if they didn't see it, they can't call it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for example, if I'm an official and I see a player lying in the corner and a player standing over him and the player is bleeding, I can infer that something probably happened.
Yep.
But unless I saw it happen, I can't call it. Didn't see it.
Even if you consult?
Well, if someone saw it. If you ask the linesman or the other officials, yeah, but if no one saw it, you can't call it.
Did they see it or they just didn't see it?
I got to be honest. I don't see officials trying to manage games in terms of who wins and...
Oh, I don't think they care either, but there is a part of me that thinks, are you going to be the one to send Crosby to the box?
Oh, sure. I don't think that bothers him. I mean, hey, listen, Andy Van Helleman gave the Philadelphia Flyers a two-man advantage in the first period of Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Final in Edmonton. I don't see that. I know a lot of officials really well. I don't see that. Because don't forget, too, in today's NHL... Everything gets seen. Even if the officials on the ice didn't see it, the television cameras catch it, and you get embarrassed. You get embarrassed.
Mm-hmm. I think with Crosby, and it's true, if you were to really like leave a camera on him and follow him for all the regular season games and playoff games, you would see the abuse that he takes on the ice, which right. I don't really think is any different than any other player. But it's true. Like if you were to show it, you would see the abuse. I think in this year... or last 2 months, the reason why maybe there's more vitriol being spewed his way is because of what he did to Mathot, led to Mathot almost losing a finger. And then now you have this case here where because you're in the Stanley Cup final, you have PK's head in the ground, then you got a bottle on the ice. Like things like that just stand out a little bit more.
And he's also the best player in the game, and some people just don't like him.
Yeah.
Some people just don't. I mean, I remember people booing Wayne Gretzky. And I said, that's great you're doing that because someday you're going to tell your grandkids you saw him play.
Yeah. No, it's very true. When you are at the top, everyone's trying to bring you back down. We said yesterday in Nashville, did you see that Philadelphia Flyers fan?
Yeah.
In the sea of yell, he's trolling Crosby with the sign that he was holding up. Let's bring in now our TSN senior hockey reporter, Mr. Frank Saravelli, covering the series. Frank, I made the assumption that you didn't join us yesterday because you were sleeping still like a rock star after going to the U2 concert. Was I right or was I wrong?
Oh, man, your intuition was spot on.
What?
I knew it!
Frank, I was defending you.
The rare morning off for me, and no morning skate for me. I had like a pile of expenses due, and I didn't set an alarm. I figured, no way I won't wake up by 11:30 for Leafs lunch, and here I go. I wake up at 12:05. It was ridiculous.
Frank.
Frankie, I know you Philly boys all too well.
I defended you, Frank. I said, there's no way Saravelli's sleeping. His phone's dead. He's stuck in an elevator. Oh,
no.
I'm crushed.
At least I'm honest.
You are the honest man from Philadelphia.
Yeah, that's why I like you even more now. So we were obviously discussing the Sidney Crosby. Yes, okay, fine, the water bottle. The exchange, though, with PK Subban. What was the vibe after the game with regard to him not getting the extra penalty and then also not getting a penalty for throwing the water bottle, whether it be intentional or not?
Well, I think if you're the Nashville Predators, you wake up today and you're thinking that Sidney Crosby plays by a different set of rules than everyone else. But I think Sid did his best to try and make light of the situation, especially with the water bottle, saying that he has a better arm than that. If he really meant to throw it, he would have thrown it. But I take a look at it, not to get all Zapruder-like, but you look at a still shot, and it does seem like he has a little overhand toss. It seemed to me like one of those situations that he was frustrated that his team didn't get the call. He actually admitted as such, and it was one of those things where he realized about halfway into throwing it that it wasn't a good idea. And he wanted to take it back, but I think at that point it was a little bit too late and kind of slipped out of his hands.
Frank, you do live in Philadelphia, which is the epicenter of...
throwing things.
You know, Crosby hatred, Crosby conspiracy theories.
And throwing.
Yeah.
And throwing things. Do you think he gets a free pass from the officials? Do you see over the year of Crosby getting a free pass?
I don't think it's limited to him. I think it's limited to a lot of the star players in this league get that same sort of privilege. I think when you're a rookie, you need to earn your respect. It's almost like you talk to different players that come in the league, they say you almost can't even say anything to the officials when you're new. You have to come in and earn your stripes, and eventually you get some of that. And I think Sid has earned that in some ways, certainly by not only being the best player in the game, but all the attention that he gets too. Certainly there's guys that are gunning for him, but Andy, I heard you in the open, like, he does give it as much as he gets it. Like, not even just the slash on Mathot that has drawn people in and their attention. I think it was, the five or six different so-called crotch shots that he's had throughout his career that were well documented right in that same week as the Mathot incident. Mm-hmm. And I think some of those things, and I think, Gord, you also hit it right on the head. There's just a selection of people, most of them being from Philly, that just don't like him. They don't like his personality. They don't like the way that he carries himself. They don't like that he's the best.
They don't like he's a penguin?
They don't like he's a penguin. There's a lot of things that people find a way to get worked up about. It was funny because one of the questions that Crosby was asked last night after the game was, do you hate P.K. Subban as much as you hate the Flyers?
And what did he say?
He just said, look, we're two guys out there trying to compete and trying to do the best for our team. He kind of just blew it off, but
of
it was a
did.
Prime opportunity missed to tee off on Philly.
Well, he did. I go to his hockey school every year and do a Q&A with him, and we take questions from the audience, and this kid got up and said, Sidney, is there an arena where you get more abuse? And before you get out, Crosby said, Philly.
Wait, that's where he gets the most abuse.
But
there's nothing quite like it.
But Frank, let's be honest though. And if 20 years ago a player was being leg locked like that, a star player like Wayne Gretzky, there'd be a brawl.
Oh, for sure. And I think the way that plays out though, like, people aren't as focused on the leg lock because maybe it was a little bit harder to see. It's so much more easy to draw your attention to Sid mashing Subban's face into the ice and being
over
the bad
and over, over and over and over again. There is an element to him though that's interesting, because Crosby doesn't say a lot publicly.
No.
Neither does Joe Sakic, neither does Connor McDavid. There are three of the most interesting people in the game to talk to away from the game. They have a lot of thoughts, they have a lot of interesting takes on the game. With Sidney Crosby, Frank, wouldn't you agree there is a tinge of Mark Messier to him? There's the skillful element that he's one of the great players of all time. He also burns really hot.
Mm. I think there's something to that. Like I said, he does give it as much as he takes it. And I think the fascinating thing about Sid is that he also has a lot of Gretzky in him, in the sense that when you talk to him, he realizes and remembers almost every sequence of every game. Like, he can go back and recite a specific moment or play in a game from 8 years ago. And you're like, how's that even possible? I can't even remember the score of the game that I covered yesterday.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things, like, when I hear him talk yesterday about the water bottle and him say, I don't even remember the play that our team didn't get the call on. I'm thinking to myself, wait a second here. This is a guy that remembers everything. I can't believe that he doesn't remember what happened with that play with the water bottle.
But there is a dirtiness to him. There's no question.
What people are highlighting when he gets away with stuff.
Different than Malkin, because Malkin loses his cool on the ice and takes undisciplined penalties.
Mm.
Crosby's much more calculated than that, isn't he?
Well, he's calculated, and he knows kind of when he can do it and get away with it. But I think the other thing that he's learned is that 5 years ago, Sidney Crosby was the guy that was losing his cool all the time. I mean, think back to that Flyers-Penguins series in 2012. I think you called those games.
I did.
If I'm not
the craziest playoff series I've ever called, I think.
Exactly. And he was unhinged at times. He wasn't himself. I think you look at the runs that the Penguins have had. Obviously, he had some great success, in the first 5 years of his career. And then they had that dry spell for a long time where they couldn't seemingly win a round. And then you look at the runs they've had now, and the huge difference that I see is he's just way more composed. he's so much harder to knock off his game. Like, that was the Flyers' game plan for the longest time, was do whatever we can to rile up Sidney Crosby, and it worked.
Well, Claude Giroux just was living rent-free in his head in that series.
Yeah, that was an awesome series to watch, which is why the battle between Crosby and P.K. Subban, even if you're diehard, but especially if you're a casual fan, you're engaged. You want to see what's going on, and especially now you want to tune in for Game 6 to see if there's any shenanigans that'll happen there between the two of them. But Frank, I know you're a huge part of putting together that TSN Hockey's top 30 free agents, with the expansion draft coming up soon. Now there was the article released yesterday about the Boston Bruins and Minnesota Wild in talks about, the Bruins, surprise, surprise, and also it was highlighted in the article, surprise, surprise, they're also looking for a top four defenseman. As just about every team in the league is looking for.
As opposed to all those teams, we don't need any help on you. We're good. Yeah.
So here's the thing. So it looks like, Boston would be willing to trade their 18th overall pick, and they're in talks with Minnesota. And we've highlighted them before here on Leafs Lunch because, again, the Leafs also looking for a top four defenseman. And we looked at the Minnesota Wild as a team that has young D guys that could possibly be traded. So you have Matt Dumba, you have Jonas Brodin. That seems to be the talk between Boston and Minnesota. But my question to you more than anything is when you see that other teams are already, or at least rumored to be talking, and it looks pretty legit like something could get done about getting a defenseman, does that put pressure on the Leafs to act quickly? Because, they're not the only ones to recognize Matt Dumba, Jonas Brodin. They're not the only ones, to recognize the guys on the Anaheim Ducks. They're not the only ones to know the Carolina Hurricanes have young D. Does that force them to move quicker or not at all?
I don't think so. It wouldn't for me. I mean, if you're a GM in this league, I think the biggest mistake that everyone makes is they overpay, whether it's in free agency or whether it's at the deadline, and they get carried away thinking that they need that one piece or that one specific player that's going to put them over the top. And more often than not, it doesn't pan out like that. I think if you're the team that's trying to get into a bidding war, you think you're going to jack up the price on your division rival, it's not going to work. If you have your price, and that should be your price regardless, and you move forward, if you can pull the trigger and get a deal done, then you do it. And if not, you find another way to get another player that works for your team. Because let's face it, if you need a top four defenseman, this is really the year to go out and find one. There's plenty that are on the market, not because teams are dying to trade them, but because in some situations they have to. Sammy Vatanen is going to be moved. He's the odd man out in Anaheim. One of those two guys, I would think, Jonas Brodin or Matt Dumba or possibly both, could be on the move in Minnesota. Because when I talked to Chuck Fletcher in Minnesota 6 months ago, he's saying, look, if I have a chance of losing any one of these guys for nothing in Vegas, it's not going to happen. I'm going to trade them before then. I don't care if I need to trade every guy on my team before I need to lose a player for nothing, because I'm going to get something in return. The only issue is that when you're Chuck Fletcher or you're any other team that's in an expansion draft, the flip side of making all these deals is that you have to then protect also whatever you're getting in return, short of it being picks or low-level prospects that don't meet the requirements.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll be keeping an eye on that. I know you will be as well. Look forward to the articles on TSN.ca. Frank, thanks for waking up today, my friend.
Yeah, go back to sleep, Frank.
Thanks. I'm feeling that's going to be a little bit easier to do in Nashville. I'm going to have a hard time getting up tomorrow, I think.
No kidding. We won't. It's okay. It's the weekend, so we won't be bugging you. Till next week, my friend.
All right, take care.
That is Frank Saravelli, our TSN senior hockey reporter, on his way to Nashville for Game 6. We'll continue to look at Game 5, and then I want to keep that conversation going just because the talks seem to be heating up, at least, or the rumors of the talks heating up between teams and acquiring defensemen, and just really, what does that mean? And Frank brought up some good points there, so we'll continue to discuss that here on Leafs Lunch as you continue to listen on TSN 1050 and stream online, tsn.ca.
Mailing in Fridays on Overdrive. 2 hours or so of entertainment.
I'm mailing in the last hour, but I'm telling you right now.
Okay, that's fine.
Listen, don't say you weren't warned, okay? Mail it in Fridays on Overdrive, starting at 4, or whenever, on TSN 1050.
Welcome back into Leafs Lunch, TSN 1050, streaming online, tsn.ca, on the iHeartRadio app. Be sure to follow us on Twitter, @LeafsLunch1050, see where the guests are coming up. Andy Petrillo.
Banana bread, Andy.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, so I did have the banana bread in the commercial. Thank you very much, Mr. Gordon Miller. It was very good. So tell your friend who baked it, because that wasn't
Jane.
You.
Jane, yeah.
Jane, thank you very much.
Jane was my roommate for 3 years, okay? And she became my roommate under a false pretense. She said, it'll be great, because all it'll be great. She could only make fettuccine and Alfredo and stir fry. That's all she could make. She never cooked.
Well, she didn't say that the meals would
but she never cooked.
A variety of meals.
She never cooked. Never. Like, it was ridiculous. I ate out for like 3 years.
You fell for it.
I totally fell for it.
Your problem.
But she makes a wicked banana bread.
Yeah, that was actually really good. Yeah. You put out a poll.
I did.
You were just asking people, because we're going to do this later. We're going to do our power rankings, Conn Smythe edition, in the noon hour here on Leafs Lunch. And you just kind of put it out earlier before the show, and you wanted to kind of, I guess, gauge the temperature of people out there. Like, what are you thinking? And I have to say, I'm a little shocked that Evgeny Malkin isn't there.
Yeah, so
why does this poor guy keep getting pushed aside?
So far, 2,800 votes on the Pittsburgh. I asked, who's been Pittsburgh's playoff MVP?
Yeah.
Crosby, Gensel, Kessel, or Malkin? 2,800 votes so far. Crosby first, Gensel second. So Crosby at 44%, mm-hmm. Gensel at 32%, Malkin at 21%. It's amazing. Like, he leads the playoffs in scoring.
Yeah. He has 28 points right now. Yeah. I mean, yes, I also mentioned Jake Gensel. I think what he's done has been pretty incredible.
And also, the runaway leader.
Yeah, and also in the noon hour, Dino Cicerelli is going to be joining us. That's because in 1981, he's the one who set the rookie record for playoff points.
Yeah.
And that was 21. And last night, Jake Gensel, with an assist, tied him. So that rookie record in the playoff for playoff points stood since 1981. Dino, by the way, is in Vegas.
Yeah.
I think he's just enjoying himself. But we'll still ask him what he thinks about Vegas and hockey market and on the cup final.
So on the Nashville side, I asked Ellis, Forsberg, Yossi, or Subban. Mm. Yossi, 37%. Subban, 28%. Ellis, 22%. Forsberg, 13%. Now, I didn't put Pekka on there. And
yeah, why?
Well, how can you when he's been pulled twice in the final?
Turned your back on him already?
No, but I guess the thing is, and I kind of wrestle with it because we don't really point it out, right? We don't say, oh, wow, you know, so-and-so was quiet for the first couple of games of the final, so he doesn't... two really bad games in the final.
Mm-hmm.
And a third in Pittsburgh that wasn't great. But he's had two real turkeys. So can Pekka be considered the playoff MVP when he's been really bad in three of the five games of the final, or mm-hmm. two and a half games?
And as we know, Conn Smythe, it's supposed to be an accumulation of the
right.
playoffs. You're not just looking at the final, but the final is the cherry on top. So it does feel like the three rounds before are all pretty much getting forgotten when it comes to...
Well, not forgotten, because if they... Although, I mean, I guess you want to say that. I mean, Erik Karlsson has still arguably been the best player in the playoffs.
We cannot still have Erik Karlsson in the Conn Smythe conversation.
Right. You can't, because he's not in the final. But, I mean, I wonder if we'll ever see a player win the Conn Smythe trophy.
Who's not in the final?
Not in the final. I don't think we ever would.
Just fly him in.
If you had to say, I would say the waiting is that the final counts for about half of it.
Well, we'll get into that later on. It is interesting because we're going to have Jamie McLennan as well join us in about 5 minutes' time, because we need a goalie to tell us what is going on in the goalie's head. And I asked this before, and I'm going to pose this question again. You know, with Pekka Rinne being as, what's the word? Is it emotional? Like, would you say, like, on the ice, right? Like, with as emotional, as expressive as he is on the ice, can that also mean that sometimes you don't have your feelings in check? Like, if you look at a guy like Matt Murray, the guy's so stoic. I've made this argument before, even when it comes to Frederik Andersen in Toronto and in this particular market. It's so stoic. Now, looks can also be deceiving, just because the exterior's calm doesn't mean the brain isn't right. going, you know, crazy. But I just almost wonder, like, would a guy like Henrik Lundqvist, I mean, sure, he's getting older now, but even in his heyday, he was just so emotional on the ice. Could you ever win a cup with a goalie?
Billy Smith, the most emotional goalie of all time.
And I loved those stories that you guys had yesterday.
Greg Gilbert. I mean, Billy Smith, the most volatile goalie of all time. I mean, Patrick Waugh.
That's true.
Deeply, deeply emotional guy who, you know, would go off routinely. Dominic Hasek.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's why I put it out there because I wasn't sure. Like, that's just my question. Like, can you win with a guy who's so overly emotional out on the ice? But now you are mentioning guys who have done that. But I just wonder, and I don't know if the game has changed so much so that maybe you need to be a little bit more stoic, or maybe, I don't know. There's other factors in the game, but that's what we're going to talk to Jamie McLennan about when he joins us in a couple minutes' time here. So he's the co-host of Overdrive, former NHL goalie, so don't go anywhere. You continue to listen to Leafs Lunch.
Four times they beat Rene in this arena, up over top of the glove, and at a time when Nashville needed their goaltender to really make a save or two, which he did in Nashville, he wasn't able to here, and they just got steamrolled today.
Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde, when it comes to Pekka Rinne right now in the Stanley Cup final, plays one way at home, but Pittsburgh is just a demon he cannot conquer right now. 0-6 career in Pitt, and it doesn't help when half of those losses come in the Stanley Cup final. You do not want that to be the case at this point in your career.
Pittsburgh can win the Cup for the fifth time in franchise history on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
If they do it, all five of their Stanley Cup wins would have been on the road.
Yeah.
They've never won the Stanley Cup on home ice. In Minnie in 91, in Chicago in 92, in Detroit in 09.
And in San Jose.
In San Jose last year. They've never won the Cup on home ice.
They're comfortable winning on the road. Let's bring on in Jamie McLennan, former NHL goalie and co-host of Overdrive from 4 to 7 right here on TSN 1050. How you doing, Noodles?
Not too bad. How you guys doing today?
We're good, but we're trying to figure out what's going on with Pekka Rinne. And I mean, I don't know. I asked this before, right, about him being, at least he's expressive out on the ice, being that kind of emotional goalie. Like, would he let a number like 0-5, which obviously now it's 0-6 after last night, but would he let a number like 0-5 and Pitt get to him? Do you think that's the case, or how do you explain the way Pittsburgh was able to dominate the way they did and chase him from the net?
Well, first and foremost, he didn't play well last night, but let's look at the first goal. Like, what is Austin Watson doing? Mm. Like, is he a road hockey goalie? And he's 12 feet away from his goalie, and he screens him. He's the only screen that Rene had on the power play. There's not a chance in heck that Justin Schultz is going to score on a one-timer from the blue line if he has a clear sight line. And there was nobody in front. So that one, you need to try and find a sight line, but your own player has got to get out of the way. The second goal, what's Matt Irwin doing, allows Russ to walk right in. Pretty good shot by Russ, but Rennie's got to have that. He's overactive on the play. Third goal, Phil makes a good play. Gino beats everyone up the ice, and in one-timer, and Weber sticks his stick in there and elevates it over the glove. So that ends Rennie's night. What was it, 3 goals on 9 shots? Not good enough, but I think his team could have helped him out a little bit too because they stunk last night.
Jamie, I mentioned before that I was doing this online poll and asking about Conn Smythe candidates for Nashville. If the Predators win Game 6 and Game 7 and win the Cup, and Rinne plays well, can we still consider him a playoff MVP candidate based on how he's played in this series?
You know what, Gord? It's an unreal question because we've had that debate on TH2N. We keep putting him in the Conn Smythe conversation and out of the Conn Smythe conversation.
Right.
Because he's brilliant, I think when you're looking at Nashville, part of the reason why they're in the finals has been his play. So you get him up to the finals, and he was their Conn Smythe candidate. And then in Pittsburgh, he hasn't been good enough. And then in Nashville, he's been really good. And there really hasn't been anybody that has jumped out from me that in Nashville that would grab that prize. So it's funny, on our show last night, we took him completely out of the top three in voting. We had Malkin, Crosby, and Gensel. But we also put a little caveat on there saying that if they lose or they win Game 6 and Rennie is probably going to be a big factor of that, sending it back to a Game 7 and they win, I would think that he would get the Conn Smythe. So it's an interesting thing because he hasn't been the runaway candidate because of how poorly he's played in Pittsburgh. But I don't see anybody else on that team grabbing it.
And yet, Jamie, when forwards or defensemen have bad games, we don't say, well, he can't win the Conn Smythe trophy now. Like Sidney Crosby, let's be honest, in the early part of the series at home, you know, no points in Game 2, 1 shot on goal.
Yeah, no shots in Game 3, was it 2? I think that
no shots in Game 3. Like, real quiet. So yeah. We don't seem to say, like, and I know you're going to, you know, this amplifies the point you've made. There's way too much credit given to goaltenders and way too much blame. I mean, all players have off nights. The difference is when a goalie has an off night, the puck goes in the net.
You're right. And it's the nature of the position. I was actually talking to Tyler just before it came on, and he said that's the truth, because I was fired up last night talking about, you know, everyone's like, what's wrong with Rene? And I was like, well, he needs to be better. But, like, how about his team actually turning a wheel last night? Like, they were guys. I don't even think Matt Murray had to shower after the game last night. I counted, if I'm lucky, I was a bit generous, 3 scoring chances that Nashville had in the whole game. Yeah, he had 24 shots, but a lot of them, the guy could have played in a lawn chair last night. That's not Matt Murray's fault. That's Nashville. That they didn't show up, and it was 3-0, and they said, check, please, we're done here. And you're right, it's the goaltender gets a lot of blame, and I don't know if there's anybody crazy enough, like people were talking, well, geez, I wonder if you're going to see UC Saros in game 6. Oh. Stop it. That's not the case. It's UC Saros didn't come in and stand on his head. He got exposed just like Pekka, because there were plays, backdoor plays and tic-tac-toe plays that Nashville was unable to shut down. So I think you make a great point, Gord. It's the goaltender carries a lot of weight, and that is the nature of the position. But even I'm guilty of that too. Last night, I took Pekka out of the Conn Smythe conversation, because how do you throw him in there? He's been pulled twice in this series, so it's been a battle. But in his own building, he's been really good. But the only thing I can point to is that there is nobody on Nashville that has really run away with it.
Can you look on the flip side? I know Matt Murray was part of the conversation quite a bit last year for being a Conn Smythe candidate, and we know it was Crosby. And even though he came on in the third round in the conference final, can we talk Matt Murray, or are there just too many other Penguins doing good things that if they were to win, you just have too much to pick from?
I would have loved to see, and I don't. This is impossible, but could you have given it to the duo of Marc-Andre Fleury and Matt Murray? Because both of them have been outstanding, and you know it's not Matt Murray's fault that he was injured and he came into the playoffs late. But Pittsburgh's not in the finals if Marc-Andre Fleury doesn't stand on his head. Let's go back to games against Washington and even earlier in the playoffs. Like he was outstanding. So I would love to see if it was a co-chaired position just by committee. Almost like the Jennings, but it's not going to be the case. And I think there's just too many other candidates. I mean, if Jake Guentzel gets one more goal here, he ties Dino Cicerelli, I believe. And he's got, I think last night, as far as points, he passed or surpassed.
He tied Dino with points last night. Yeah, and he's got one more goal to tie.
It's pretty impressive. Like I say, I think the kid's had a great run. You know, obviously it helps playing with Crosby and getting some of those looks, but it has been a weird playoffs for me, because Geno Malkin has been outstanding as far as points, but there's been games where he's been an absolute ghost as well. So I don't know if that speaks to the entertainment value of these finals. Like I'm not entertained. If I'm a Pittsburgh fan or a Nashville fan individually those nights, yeah, you're excited that they won, but these games haven't been barn burners, and to be honest, they kind of stink.
Yeah, a little strange, but I did want to ask you this, because we just have a couple more minutes here before we hit the noon hour. The IOC has announced that 3-on-3 basketball is now going to be a part of the Olympics beginning in Japan. Could that be a solution for the NHL? You don't have to send as many players. What if hockey went 3-on-3?
Be interesting. I mean, I haven't seen that. It would be a novelty. That's for me. It would be. We all love 3-on-3 overtime. What would be the rules? What would be the timing of it?
Yeah, the periods would have to be shorter.
Yeah,
I think.
We played during the lockout once a 3-on-3 tournament just for NHLPA players, and it was 4 segments on hockey night. And it was a real fun tournament. You were dying as a player, because I think the games were about 10 or 15 minutes long. And for a goaltender, it was all shots. It would be entertaining, but the games would be, honestly, 15-14. Like, there'd be a lot of scoring, a lot of chances. But It'd be interesting. I'd look at it.
I just thought of it. You could almost make it like a rugby sevens time wise, so it's a quick game.
Can I be camp no fun?
Three on three.
Can I be camp no fun?
Why?
Never going to happen.
Come on.
Never going
to. I'm just trying to help.
See, I would trust Gord's opinion because you're a lot more schooled in the international hockey front than
never
I am.
Happen.
So yeah, I don't think it'll happen, but. I like Andy's thought process. Let's step outside the box here and get some entertainment for people.
Okay, I want to ask you a quick question before you go, Jamie.
Yeah.
Put your coaching hat on. What can you fix in Pecorine's game? Besides the location of the games.
Ask him if he plays in Pittsburgh to wear his Nashville home jersey underneath his road jersey. He'll come more comfortable. But honestly, I think I've said this before. There's a fine line with Pekka between overactiveness and being aggressive. And you saw in the Rust goal, he was overactive and he didn't give himself a chance to get his glove up. The way that he carries his glove, it's from kind of a top position down, and we're seeing guys kind of shoot lower glove now between the glove and the top of the pad. Now Rennie is really good with that, but I would just try and have him take a collective breath, like just to slow his game down slightly, because when he's in more control, I think he gives himself a better chance to make those saves because he's really athletic and explosive. But I've said this before, there's a fine line between being out of control and being explosive. And when he gets into trouble, he's more out of control than he is explosive.
Mm-hmm. All right, Noodles, thanks so much for taking the time. We'll be listening to you, I guess, later on today, 4 to 7 on Overdrive.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me.
That's Jamie McLennan, this Hockey Insider, brought to you by Finance It, monthly payment plans for big dreams and everyday budgets. You're already poo-pooing the three-on-three. See, the league would not have to shut down. You wouldn't have as many players go. You'd shorten it. It'd be exhilarating.
Andy, why is the NHL not going to the Olympics?
Because they don't want to shut down.
No.
Well, there's other reasons, but they don't want to shut down.
They want more of the money.
Everything boils down to money.
Welcome to 2017.
All right. Noon hour coming up next on Leafs Lunch.